रामाय राम भद्राय रामचंद्राय वेदसे रघुनाथाय नाथाय सीतायाः पते नमः. अयोध्या कांड चैप्टर नंबर 20. यू शॉल नॉट गो सेज कौशल्या. रेसिटेशन बिगिंस नाउ. Rama left the apartments of Kaikeyi with a bowed head and clasped hands, while doleful cries and heart-rending lamentations followed him from the assembled women therein. Alas, Rama needed not the word of his father to attend to every detail of our comfort and happiness. Rama is to be driven to the gloomy forest today, and he, the goal of the aspirations of all being and the surest means thereto. He waits upon us with greater diligence and devotion and respect than he ever accords to Kaushalya, the mother that gave him birth. Harsh speech provokes him not to reply, nor do his acts or words provoke anger in others. Nay, his sweet and gentle accents soothe and calm the hearts of such as give way to senseless wrath. Our king has clean taken leave of his senses. Has he not set his hand to the glorious work of universal ruin and destruction by banishing to the woods Rama, in whom all things live and move and have their being? And they lifted their voices aloud, gentle and simple, queen and maiden, and cried, "Fie and shame upon the monarch!" The frightful clamor from the apartments of the women fell upon the ears of Dashrath. His feeble heart, stricken till then with the grief of his son banished to a grievous doom, broke down quiet, and he fainted away where he sat from grief and shame. The pitiful wail fell upon the ears of Rama as he passed out. It grieved his heart sore, but as he saw no means of assuaging their griefs, he put on a cheerful front that he might not at least intensify them. Heaving hot and profound sighs like a wounded elephant, he never lost his presence of mind, but quickened his steps to his mother's palace, followed by his beloved brother Lakshmana. The chief of the wardens there was a very old gentleman. He sat there in his place of office, wand in hand, while countless subordinates stood round in deep reverence. They sprang up in joy to welcome Rama and shouted, "Victory! Ever victory to thee!" He passed on into the second block filled with Brahmanas, profoundly versed in the sacred scriptures, whom Dasharatha delighted to honor. Rama saluted those aged repositories of saintliness and wisdom and passed on to the third block, guarded by elderly dames and damsels. They gave him their sincere and joyful blessings and announced his approach to Mother Kaushalya. The queen spent the long night in fast and meditation to secure peace and prosperity to her darling son. At daybreak, she engaged herself in reverent worship of Lord Vishnu. Ever occupied with vows, fasts, penances, mortifications, and meditation, she was in the sacrificial hall, where Rama found her clad in garments of white silk, directing the Brahmanas in making offerings of auspicious things into the fire with appropriate chanting of the mantras. Curds, colored unbroken rice, ghee, sweets, cooked food, parched grain, white garlands, sweet drinks, food prepared with sesame seeds, sacred twigs for fuel, a water jar, and other necessary materials stood in readiness for divine service. She was offering libations of water to the gods to ensure welfare and happiness to her son, and was wholly absorbed in the details thereof. Her frame was wasted through constant observances of vows and fasts, but bright as the halo of glory that surrounded her, even as a goddess. She was overjoyed to see her son in her rooms, a rare visitor there, and sprang to meet him, even as a mare her fond foal. Rama went round his mother in reverence, bowed low, and touched her feet. Kaushalya embraced him fondly, smelt the crown of his head, and her supreme love and affection for him found hearty expression and sincere prayers for his good. May length of days, boundless fame, and proper observance of the royal traditions crown you ever, even as your ancestors of glorious memory, righteous, noble, and great in the experience of yours. Your father was never known to break his word. This day he will install you as the heir apparent, even as he promised it to you. For is he not deeply versed in the knowledge and practice of the mysteries of Dharma? She offered him a seat and invited him to dine there. Modest and unassuming by nature, Rama's extreme devotion to his mother would not allow him to take a seat before her. He touched it instead and replied to her with folded hands and with the least tinge of shamefacedness in his voice. Mother, a great fear has befallen us that will cause no small grief and anxiety to you, Sita, and to Lakshmana. The king has given orders to stop my coronation and install Bharata in my place. I am ordered to live for 14 years in the forest of Dandaka. I go straight from here and that now. I have come to take leave of you. I have resolved to dwell in the uninhabited wilds, feeding upon honey, roots, and fruits, even as the hermits, and abstaining from the flesh of animals. What have I to do with these seeds, curiously wrought with priceless diamonds? The Vishtara is more meat for one of my order. The cruel words fell like a thunderbolt on Kaushalya, and she fainted away from excess of grief, even as a huge sala tree in the forest cut down by the axes of woodmen, or even as a shining one hurled down to the earth from the mansions of light. Rama sprang towards her and raised her all gently in his arms, massaged her wasted limbs as she lay like an uprooted plantain tree or like a mare who rolls in the dust to shake off the fatigue that comes of being overburdened. Soon she regained consciousness, a stranger to such calamities, fitted in every way to enjoy the utmost joy and happiness that life can give. And brought up in the very lap of wealth, luxury, and power, she bitterly complained of her fate. Darling, I am sure that all this grief would not have befallen me were he not born to me as my son. A barren woman has no other sorrow than that of childlessness. I sink under the heavy load of manifold misfortunes. I have a son, but I have him not. I spent over him years of care and solicitude, and I live to see the work of my hands undone before my very eyes. I counted upon your devoted service to me in my last days. I fondly hope that your hands will close mine eyes before they take leave of the light of the sun. But I live to see you violently torn away from me in my helpless old age. The curse of childlessness has practically come back upon me to dog my dying days. Alas, a barren wife has only the disease of her heart to grapple with. But heart, mind, senses, body, all are hopelessly consumed by my grief. To the world I am the queen consort of Dasharatha of Ayodhya, the lord of the earth, but devoid of the wealth, the power, and the pomp that make it a reality. My husband's heart is turned away from me. Your birth gave me a new lease of life and instilled fresh hope in my heart that I might get back a husband's love and queenly power through his supreme affection for you. That has been the mainspring of my life. Alas, grief more intense, greater than I have experienced till now, is my portion till death. Denied of the joy and comfort that is mine by right, I have to endure the cruel words and the wanton indignities from the other wives of my husband. Favorites of fickle fortune, a king's fancy or a whim has raised them to where they stand now, co-wives with me and rivals of my husband's love. They have poisoned my lord's heart and shut me out from the light of his affection. Well, did they keep it back till now? They but hinted, suggested, but hereafter they would thrust their insolence upon my face and cry in scorn and fury, "Get away, darken not the presence of my lord." Or they may adopt a tone of ridicule and say, "Surely a barren woman is by nature fitted to be the center of feasts and pageants." Or when the monarch chances to be my guest, they will burst on us with envy and drag him away thence by force, crying, "What do you do here? Know ye not that your place is in my rooms?" their birth, their status, and their talents do not in the least give them courage to speak such words to me, were it not for the cruel blow dealt by fortune to my honor and happiness. Women do not survive such shocks. Before me stretches a whole eternity of grief and tears, unparalleled and unutterable. Behold, you bound me quiet, and you are by my side, the wall, the flower of valor, my firstborn, and the next in the order of succession to the throne of the earth. Just imagine what it would be like when you are away. Death, natural or violent, would be a more merciful boon. Every day finds my husband colder to me. Destined by birth and by fortune to lord it over the earth and its countless millions, here am I placed by sufferings in the same level as the waiting women of Kaiki. Nay, not so, for they at least come in for a share of her favor. If there chanced to be any well-meaning soul who was devoted to me and spoke to me words of hope and cheer, he will avoid me like a pestilence, lest Kaikeyi's son might punish him cruelly for it. Kaikeyi has never a kind look or word for me. Cruel taunts and cutting sarcasms were ever known to fall from her lips when I was concerned. And now this last and cruelest stroke of misfortune delivers me over to her, body and soul. Have I the heart to brave her frowns? It is 17 years since your second birth, and I derived marvelous patience to bear my cross. My Rama will grow to be a youth. He will take his place on the throne of his father, and then my sorrow sets forever. But alas, my hopes are nipped in the bud. The jibes and the jeers of my rivals would pierce my wounded heart. And how long can this poor wasted frame bear those refined tones? And it is a night that knows no morning. Youth, health, beauty have passed away from me. I can be nothing but an eyesore to the king. I am sure that it is not in me to live this dog's life of misery and disgrace without the light of your sweet presence to relieve the awful gloom. Verily, this is a dark misery that the countless fasts, vows, observances, and prayers, all directed to one end, that is your happiness and prosperity, have borne no fruit. My sweet hopes have turned to dust and ashes in my mouth. The glorious future that dawned on my expectant sight has suddenly darkened into a gloom ominous and terrible. Well, I must even reap what I sowed. I made the bed and must perforce lie upon it. My heart breaks not under the stress and strain of this mighty calamity that comes upon me all on a sudden, even as a roaring flood that rushes down during the rains along the bed of some broad river while the solid banks crumble into powder. Is it imperishable? Is this attenuated frame of mine really made of the heart of the adamant that is grief-proof? Is it then true that death comes not upon man a second sooner or later than it is time? Or has death forgotten me? Or is the world of Yama full to overflowing that there is no room for me? Would that the dread lord of death bear me away hence this very moment, even as a king of the beasts carries away a weeping fawn or doe? If there is a least chance of our being blessed with death in oblivion before our time, I would go straight from here to the mansions of Yama, then live miserably down here, even as a cow violently deprived of one calf. Alas, a cry in the wilderness, a seed sown on rocks has been all my worship, meditation, charity and penance to secure lasting happiness and power to my darling boy. This is the most unkindest cut of all. My place is not here when you are in the woods, and I will even follow you where you go. A weak and aged cow can never be parted from the side of the calf on which its hopes and joys rest. Thus moaned and wailed Kaushalya in the utter agony of her grief. Then it came back to her that she might have to part from Rama at any time. Her rivals will wreak upon her the hoarded vengeance of the long past. Rama was bound by the bonds of truth and was absolutely powerless to stretch forth a helping hand. She raised her voice and wept aloud, even as a she-canary who sees a young one struggling in the toils of the fowler. Mangalam Koshalendraya Mahaniya Gunapti Chakravarti Dhanurjaya Sarva Bhaumaya Mangalam.